Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Glad to have you along. Hope you're having a great week, great day, great life. All of those and not necessarily in that order, okay? Priorities. Wendy's Coffee House, you can check it out on the blog spot. Usually I'll put links up for the show, and then I also have some that I might talk about that are already posted on the blog. My guest coming up in the next few minutes or so is going to be really fascinating because she's actually done a ton of statistics on the UFO sightings. So for all of the people who say it's not really happening, and well, it is. And I think we'll get into more details about that. The truth is out there. Her name is Cheryl Costa, and she also writes a column and has the book, This is What You're Going to Want for Christmas, UFO Sightings Desk Reference, United States of America, 2001 to 2015. Okay, it's paperback, which helps. It's going to be a heavy book. All right, so in the meantime, though, stuff in the news. And this is, we're going to preface it with this. Bruce Lipton, who does the biology of belief, talking about consciousness and how it impacts us. The atomic level, at that level, matter does not even exist with certainty. It only exists as a tendency to exist. Okay? Which means everything we see is relative in a way. All right? Okay, so bookmark that. And then come back to this new study they have out on pigeons. And the reason I wanted this, because I thought it said a whole lot about our own perceptions, and maybe we still have a lot to learn, and I think definitely we do. Pigeons are smart enough to perceive abstract concepts like time and space. The new research that they're doing right now, talking about what they are capable of knowing, of perceiving, neuroscience and cognitive research shows that although we humans aren't conscious of it psychologically, we perceive time in relation to space. Okay, well, pigeons, University of Iowa report, they discovered the birds, they can perceive abstractions and connect them, but they do it through different cognitive mechanisms than humans. So they don't have the same, in their way of viewing their anatomy, their physiology, they don't have the same kind of elements that we do. And this is one of those things that's so fascinating because they respond similarly to space and time tests. And they even have the same conceptual interdependence as monkeys and humans. Okay. But what they said is that with this interdependence, it violates the belief, at least psychologically, that space and time are independent dimensions. Okay. Pigeons don't have a parietal cortex, so they're processing concepts somewhere else, which is fantastic. Because even though it's what it's saying is that we are very similar, humans, monkeys, pigeons, all the animals in some way, shape, or form have unique things that make us more alike than different. They're trying to define how that works. But this little piece in here says that somehow they're able to process this stuff without the same biology that we have, and yet they are in sync, which means if we are seeing things and we think it happens a certain way, then obviously showing that the pigeons can do it too without having the same abilities or same equipment that we have, something else is happening. All right, moving on. Open-minded people have a different perceptual a vision, different perceptual analysis of their reality. Okay, this is also one of those little studies that they've come out with saying that, and there's a real fun website that you go and you could do a demo that they put people through where it's the gorilla, invisible gorilla. And that talks about when you're focusing so hard on something, you miss something that otherwise might be obvious. And this is why we're getting into the UFO content, all right? Because with this little demonstration, it shows that people who are very narrow focused may miss something that could be incredibly obvious to somebody else, all right? Because there's lots of times when you get a UFO report or a report of anything weird, unusual, offbeat, and there will be people who said, oh, it was so obvious. And other people said, no, it didn't happen. It wasn't there. Are you kidding? You're nuts. Okay. Which is always a great answer. discredit the person. But at the same time, these things are fascinating because it underlies what I want to point out with the information with Cheryl Costa is that there's so much going on that humans may not be able to track it all. So we really rely on people doing some more statistics and more analysis and more mapping to find out the commonalities and the patterns to give us maybe a broader picture of what's happening. And so that's why I think this is really fantastic information and great timing. And the other thing, there was this fantastic sighting. And fortunately, because they were an Uber driver, he was running his camera at the time, and he captures this, wow, massive semi-truck doing a wipeout. But what's also visible in there is this incredible meteor. They call it a UFO. Kind of looks like a meteor, but it's you can't miss it. As that goes by, then right after that, the semi just does this incredible wipeout. He says, all I was doing was trying to get out of the way. But when he posted the video that his dash cam caught, you see this clear, can't miss it, wonderful flyby by a UFO, whatever. Anyway, so those kinds of things we have access to now that we might not have had access to before with a lot of our new technology, the types of cameras we use. And there's another element I'll ask Cheryl about in terms of her information, her background. She has a wonderful background. We're going to get into that. Cheryl, I made you hang on here, but the truth is out there and you've got it up close and personal and statistics to back it up. Thank you for doing your work. What was the most exciting thing once you got this book published?
I think the most exciting thing for me was the relief that we had just spent 16 months doing it, and we've got it out there on the street. It was every weekend for 16 months.
And see, you and your partner thought it'd take about a year or so, and then you could have gotten twice as much in your book, and you kind of cut things out just to make it a little bit heavier, less weighty.
Well, it's a 2.5-pound book and over about 374 pages, and had we done what we called the city directory part of it, it would have maybe doubled or tripled the size of the book, and it would have put it out of reach of most people from a cost standpoint. Plus, it would have taken us probably another 8 months to get the city data sorted out, and we're still working on that. It's that big of a job. So,
see, that's what I think is fantastic. Is that once you got this done, that there's so much more to add to it, and we'll get into maybe a potential for some of our local sightings or local impact as well. But first, back to the basics. Cheryl Costa is at this point the author of the UFO Sightings Desk Reference, and this is from the U.S. 2001 to 2015. And she's a resident of upstate New York, saw her first UFO when she was 12. We'll get into that. Military veteran, retired information security professional from the aerospace industry. And so this gives her a little bit of background, but she's also the writer, the columnist for the Syracuse New Times, and just keeping her eyes on the sky. I think with all of this going on, and especially more interest, you might have the benefit of getting maybe a few more people who have, government contacts helping you out. Has that been the case at all?
Absolutely not. In fact, they're avoiding me like the plague because they know I'll publish it.
Okay. So we're going to go back with that because the thing that I thought was perfect timing, Newsweek is coming out with their special editions, Life Beyond Earth, and they do have interviews, like 100 pages or so here, interviews of researchers and first-person accounts of people who've been abducted, that kind of stuff. You avoided that. So this is basically the stats of sightings, who, what, where, why, when, all that, instead of the, okay, now we've been taken, which is kind of harder to give any kind of documentation or statistics for.
I caught a lot of, I'm going to say it very plainly, I caught a lot of crap for not putting stories and anecdotes in there, okay?
Yes.
In fact, that was one of the things that the New York Times people, when they were when they had a Pulitzer Prize writer up here, Ralph Blumenthal, he came up, spent a day with us. You know, apparently, I think to make sure we weren't living in my mother's cellar, but he came up and he says, "You ladies did the science." He says that's what got our attention, because for anybody who knows anything about UFOs and like the press, the New York Times hasn't had a nice thing to say about UFOs for 70 years. And then we come along with this statistics book, and they go over it with a fine-tooth comb, and we blew their socks off.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back and talk about the New York Times approach, okay? So hang on. Cheryl Costa is my guest, and if you're wanting to get a good Christmas gift for someone or maybe any time of year, birthday, whatever, UFO Sightings Desk Reference is a good place to start. And this is, I mean, it's got everything in here. So coming back with Wendy's Coffee House, Cheryl Costa. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. Hello there, glad to have you along. Going back to Bruce Lipton, according to Bruce Lipton, the research illustrates by changing your perception, your mind can alter the activity of your genes and create over 30,000 variations of products from each gene. In other words, you can rewrite your genetic program just by changing your mind, okay? So if you are in any way, shape, or form interested in the topic of UFOs, then even listening to this show might broaden your awareness just a tad, and think of all that genetic activity. Okay, Cheryl, when the New York Times came to visit you and did the article and all, what I think is funny is they say, you did the statistics and that caught our attention. But then the critical part of, well, why didn't you include the abductee element? How'd that go?
Well, they didn't care. Actually, they were very pleased that there was no stories. We only had about 5 chapters worth of analysis in the front of the book. The rest of it has all the charm of a bank ledger. It's all charts, graphs, and tables. But the thing is if you've got any interest in this stuff, the secrets are in the numbers. Believe me, and I've been telling a lot of people, the truth is in the numbers.
What did you find that was the most surprising?
You talk to anybody at a coffee clutch and say, where do you think the UFOs are? And they'll tell you, oh, they're all out in the desert, or they're all up in Alaska, or something like this. Basically, every place everybody thought they were, they aren't. Okay? The highest volume of UFO reports in the 15-year sample, and this is all 21st century data, 2001 to 2015, California, 15,836 sightings. Okay, and that's a lot, mm-hmm. And that's the reported ones. We estimate only 1 in 42 people reports what they see. Los Angeles County had 3,000, not the city, the county, the larger county, had 3,212 sightings in the same period. That is more than 40 of the individual states by itself.
Wow. I got a question real quick. You go back, well, only 1 in 42 people reports what they see. Where does that statistic come from?
We worked it out. We worked it out from 2 different surveys that were out there. One that was done in 2012 by the National Geographic, and then there was another survey that was done this past summer in the middle of July by Fox Pictures.
Okay. I'm not going to question you on everything, but just in case.
So I pulled the numbers, and we kind of crunched them back and forth until they started matching up with the numbers, and we came up with a number of around 42, 45, something like that.
Okay. So basically this says that there are a lot of other potential sightings that people are just saying, I don't think so. They're talking themselves out of it, or they've got relatives who would be embarrassed if they spoke up.
Yeah, it's like that. And the problem is that there was a number floating around for a long time, 1 in 10, and you hear that a lot in the UFO community. The problem is where they did that polling was always at, like, UFO conventions and big talks at colleges where everybody's in there to hear the speaker talk about UFOs, so there's already an interest. So
yes,
you're sort of preaching to the choir there, you know. But based on these two different surveys and the numbers of people said that they've seen a UFO, and the data we had from our survey, we crunched it backwards, and we came up with this number that seems to work around 40 or 50 is that number. One out of 40 or 50 report what they see.
Okay, so it's in more populated areas than you would think. And is that because there's more people are likely to see it as opposed to, you know, it's a desert, there's one person there, one sighting, versus 2,000 people in the middle of a, you know, city block?
Well, 2,000 people in the city block see the same sighting and still one sighting.
Okay.
Think about that in a second. I had that problem with Pine Bush, New York. You know, 4,000 people saw that. Yeah, but it's one sighting.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fine.
People say population is the driver. I heard that when the book first came out. Talk radio hosts were just banging on me about that. And in the book, we actually have the second chapter in there. We showed a comparison of the top 10 states. Mm-hmm. The top 10 states represent 52% of the sightings for the country. Okay. And if you get away from California for a moment and look at, like, the next two, Florida's number two, Texas is number three. Texas has twice the population of Florida, but Florida outdoes Texas.
Hmm. Okay. Ocean?
Okay. Maybe, but don't be so fast to put a reason on it, because the reason's beyond our human intellect, trust me.
Yeah.
Okay, now people say about the population, is it, well, there's two arguments, and we struggle with this ourselves. Is it because there are more people there to see the UFOs and report them, or is it because there's more people there and the UFOs are interested in watching cute humans?
Okay.
Okay.
And no clue?
No clue. Okay. Well, we made several discoveries, though, and my spouse, Linda, Miller Costa. She's the government scientist type of person. She was the head librarian for the Environmental Protection Agency for 15 years. Her past background was the National Academy of Science. Smart lady here. Mm-hmm. Okay. So when I started putting the statistics together, she said, "I will lay it out," and we laid the book out very much like a government report. Maybe a little subversive, because we wanted people to kind of think. That's why it's got no cute aliens on the front. It's got a boring cover. We wanted it to look like a government report. And one of the points, she discovered two things. One, she discovered, I had this stupid little chart. I started with New York State, since that's my beat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the UFOs, besides the yearly spread and breaking down by counties and all that, we did one, UFOs by month. Okay.
Okay.
And what happened was, we just assumed that everybody saw all the UFOs. June, July, and August were through the roof. And, you know, June was ticking up there, and September was ticking down, and the rest of the year had this quiescent amount of sightings, you know, kind of level.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought everybody had that. No, 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 no. She looks over the terminal one day. We had all our terminals in our sewing room, so that's why Vogue magazine did an article about us, because the New York Times article referenced our computers were sitting amongst our cutting tables and sergers and things.
Oh.
And,
okay.
And so the goofy thing was, she looked at it and says, "Hey, those sighting patterns change depending upon the latitude." And I said, "What?" So I went back in there and looked at it, and up in the northern states, yeah, the weather's really nice in the summer, June, July, August type of thing, and then it falls off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when we move down in latitude, say the middle-level states, Maryland and Virginia going straight across the country type of thing, that peak in the middle in July and August starts flattening out. When you get down to the southern states, it's statistically flat year-round, except for some peak periods in tourist states.
Wow.
And what we came up with was, this is a function of, and we also determined, we also did a, what day of the week are the most sightings?
Mm-hmm.
And out of those two charts, sets of charts, we figured out that it's about leisure time and temperate weather.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. More likely for people to be out and looking up.
Right.
Possibly. Because they're not busy doing something that keeps... Okay. All right. Now, hang on. We're going to do a break. And The deal is, again, I'm talking with Cheryl Costa. She's a UFO columnist and also the author, co-author of the book UFO Sightings Desk Reference United States of America, 2001 to 2015. I want to talk about your sighting, the first one you had, and then you said you had a couple of others too. And, you know, just to give a template for what it was and then when you really got serious about this thing, okay?
Okay.
Okay, all right. So hang on. And if you're following along at home, in the car, wherever you are, okay, I hope you're not texting. Don't be doing that. UFOs know who you are. Okay, maybe I don't. Somebody else does. But you can check out Wendy's Coffee House. I'm going to put links to Cheryl's information and stuff there too. So just follow along. And in the meantime, if you've had your own sighting, you know, don't be shy about this. This is the stuff that gives us some kind of data to work with and a little bit more information. And that's where we learn and grow and know more. So stick around, my guest, Cheryl Costa, coming up with her own sightings, her personal experience, and how she got started here. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO, Talk Radio. Back in a few. KCMO, Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House. And I've talked to people, you know, once you bring this topic up, it's amazing. They'll kind of pull you aside and say, well, I experienced this. And this is something I get with ghosts and that kind of stuff all the time is that it isn't just out in the open. It's a kind of you know, they catch your eye and then see you wander off over to the side and then come up and tell you something. All right. And that's very much the case with the UFO stuff. And why we have this... in some way, fear, another way, shame about talking on this topic is annoying. I'm hoping, you know, that these things are changing, but I'm so glad you've got the book with all the statistics because it's a unifier in a way of giving us an idea of how extensive this stuff is. And when we are taught and told to keep it under wraps, then we fall into that trap of ignorance and not knowing. And, you know, it's very, I think, for us, important to get some of these topics out more in the open so we can compare notes. And Cheryl, by doing this, you know, you've given us a whole lot of ammo to work with that's legit and can be, in some way, shape, or form, verified. The statistics are now out there, okay? Cheryl Costa also had, it as a kid, a sighting. What happened?
I was about 12 years old. It was 1965, and it was late August, about 2 weeks before school started, okay? And we had visited relatives up in a kind of a small farming community, population of about 100 was the town. And we were coming down off the hill where they lived, and a dirt road, and going down to the main highway to head home. And my mother had my father pull the car off the road. And it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, late August, clear blue sky as far as you could see, and parked out there in the western sky was this silver ball. Now, I'll tell you how big it was. If you hang your arm all the way out and look at your little fingernail,
yeah,
that's how big it was.
Oh, okay.
And it was just sitting there like a rock. Wow. And my mother explained it might be something NASA was doing. Might be something that the Air Force was doing, and it might be people from another world. And she explained all that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, I was 12 years old. I was starting to get to that age where mom and dad are stupid, you know. and this was fascinating, you know. So we got back on the road after looking at it for 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
And as we got back down to the bottom of the hill and turned onto the main highway, I crawled up in the back window of that Chevy Impala and watched that thing, okay, wondering who are these people, okay?
Yeah.
And when it decided to go about 10 minutes later, it was like, gone.
Wow.
And it didn't wink out. It like took off and just disappeared. But it was like a flash of an eye type of thing.
Okay, so silver and round.
Silver and round. It was a spherical.
Okay. Okay.
And so that was my first one. That got a dialogue going with my mother and kind of a relationship. Our relationship changed in a way. I started getting books at the library and reading on this topic. She got books at the library and was reading on this topic, and we would share information back and forth. And we had quite a dialogue on this particular topic. And
what decade?
Well,
About
Pardon me?
What decade? When was it?
Late 60s.
Okay.
In fact, when Von Daniken's book, Chariot of Gods, came out, 68,
mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. That book was dog-eared to death, you know,
yes.
From us both tearing it apart. And then, Chris, then we had our aunts coming over and pawing all over it over coffee and things. So
mm-hmm.
That, like I said, got an interest going. Now, but did I become head over heels about UFOs? No, I didn't, okay? But a couple of years later, 1971, Christmas Eve 1971, I was stationed in Cam Ranh Bay, Vietnam. I was in a communications squadron there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Christmas Eve. I was walking with a friend of mine down to the base chapel. We were going to go to midnight mass for something to do. And the sky, you got to understand where we were in Vietnam, was out on a sandbar. It's called Cam Ranh Bay, and the Big Leg Peninsula that's out there is all sand. It's like a desert.
Mm-hmm.
And we were looking at the western sky, gazillion stars in the sky, one of those kinds of nights, and we see this thing streaking across the sky, and we both think, yeah, jet, you know?
Yeah.
And then it stops, and it sits there, and my friend looked at me, and he says, is that thing going to do something? I said, I don't know, and it starts dancing around like a fairy for a couple of moments, and I said, oh, that's interesting, and then, poof, gone, you know?
Wow.
And like I said, neither one of us had our mind on midnight mass when we got there. You know? fascinating. And in fact, you know, I didn't share that with anybody until about 15 years ago, actually 20 years ago now. But I had some Native American friends, and somehow that conversation got going. A conversation of UFOs got going around a campfire someplace, and I brought that sighting up. I hadn't talked about it since that time until about 20 years ago.
Okay, and now with the Native Americans, is there a different group that is more likely to report, not just see, but report a sighting? Does that make any difference in those statistics, or is that, do you have a way of telling?
Not that I could tell.
Okay.
See, the thing is, neither of the national databases, National UFO Reporting Center or MUFON, collects demographic data, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I got to make sure your listeners understand, two things. One, these are not professional observers. These are just your average person on the street and saw something amazing.
Yeah.
The average sighting week, day to day. Remember I talked about the weekday sightings are kind of flat and quiescent?
Okay? Yeah.
It's what that is about is those people are the people who are out there day in and day out. It's the guy who walks outside at 9:30 at night from his factory and has a smoke break and sees something. It's about the person who takes the dog out for a walk or takes the dog out for a walk and has a smoke. Those are the people who report these things weekday. In fact, a number of MUFON investigators and I were talking about this at a convention, and they said, yeah, one of the first things we search on is smoke and dog, you know. And
yeah, the dog has to go out.
Yeah, well, that's it. And these people are out there day in and day out. Now, when we did the weekday chart, like I said, it was pretty much sitting there. The national numbers, took all the national numbers, put them in there by percentage, and it sat there and bounced back and forth between about 10 and 12%. Friday, it ticks up to about 14% of the numbers, and it's up to 17% of the numbers, which is about 5 points higher than the rest of the 5 to 7 points higher than the rest of the week, and then Sunday goes back down to what Friday is. So it ticks up going into the weekend. Saturday night's real heavy, and of course the cynics will say, "Well, everybody's getting drunk and having drugs." And I said, "Yeah, but the problem is people who are drunk and on drugs are not filling out a UFO reciting report because those things are like filling out a credit application. you don't do it unless you really are driven
determined
to do so."
Determined and lucid, yes. You can tell the difference. Okay, so when you're getting all of this information, then it tells you, because I remember reading, you said in 2012, I think they were saying, oh, the sightings have declined, it's going away, it was just a fad, a phase, whatever. And you said that was irritating because you had a gut feeling that was inaccurate.
It was, and I'll tell you what happened was back in 1989-90 time frame. I moved out of my apartment, put everything into storage. I was getting ready to move into another apartment, and I got sent away on a couple-of-week business trip. And while I was on that business trip, I had to be hospitalized and had to have abdominal surgery. I was in the hospital 10 days in another state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I got back, I didn't have a place to go. So a friend of mine who was taking care of his father who had cancer, he says, here's the keys to my house over in Laurel, Maryland. Feed the cat. Stay there as long as you like.
Okay.
I stayed there about 6 months. The guy had no cable, but he had first editions of just about everything that had been published to that point on UFOs.
That is cool.
So I had sort of like the college education on UFOs. Again, I wasn't an activist.
Okay,
so
hold on. Now we have to, before we fast forward, we've got to take another break here. We're going to take it. It'll be quick.
Pay the bills.
It'll be quick. Okay, so hold on. The cat is the key, all right? And we're going to come back with more Cheryl Costa and what was happening and what sparked this whole creative drive toward getting the facts out about UFOs on Wendy's Coffee House. Man, it's just going way too fast. Way too fast. KCMO Talk Radio, Wendy's Coffee House, my guest Cheryl Costa, who is a columnist. And she's also an author, columnist, does a UFO column for the Syracuse New Times. And then we also have the book, UFO Sightings Desk Reference, United States of America, 2001 to 2015. Yes, it's alive and kicking. It's well. And there are sightings galore. I've checked the MUFON site. I've even made my own, you know, contribution. But Cheryl was talking about this cat connection. See, there's this cats, something about cats. They just kind of, they're innocuous. It's a subtle thing, but there's the cat, and so you're taking care of the cat and finding this treasure trove of UFO wonder world. So what was, at that point, you had to be at least intrigued.
Well, yeah, it filled in a lot of holes, believe me. And it had, giving an example, he had just about everything Stanton Friedman had written up until that point. So
I got a
good dose of Stanton.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. Again, I got my eyes open to a lot of other aspects of this thing. And then, fast forward many years. I've retired from Lockheed Martin, and I'm working for a newspaper, not the one I write for, but a different newspaper. I was part of the production staff late night, and we had just put the morning edition to bed. The presses were rolling, and all I have to do is sit there and patiently drink my coffee and wait for the presses to be done. Okay, that's all I had to do at that point. And so I was Googling something, and there was a CNN story. This is November 4th, 2012. And there was this little sidebar story on CNN that said, oh, UFOs have been declining since the 80s. Maybe they were always just an urban legend.
Yeah, and that would be what,
And I sat there and I said, wait a minute. That doesn't sound right, and it was just that gut, So first time in my life, I went out to the National UFO Reporting Center, Googled that, got on there, pulled up a little spreadsheet, and I grabbed the numbers from about 1980 all the way up to like a 1999 kind of thing, just dropped in the yearly summaries, plotted the graph, and it went up like a rocket. And my first impression was, what memo didn't the UFOs get?
Yeah.
And so I got digging around in the database, and I started reading some amazing things in there. Now, your average UFO report is a sentence or two, if you're lucky. Sometimes there's some really good narrative. Sometimes the rare case, you'll get a trained observer.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw some amazing stuff. So I went out, and I wrote some summary stories up on some of these, and I went and pitched them to my editors at that paper. Different paper.
Mm-hmm.
And they laughed me out of the office. I went out to about 10 other authors, different papers in upstate New York, got laughed out, thrown out, had one editor look at me, and what brand of tinfoil do you wear? That kind of thing. Finally, I got an appointment with the Syracuse New Times. The editor at that time is a guy by the name of, I'm going to drop his name, don't worry, but Larry. And I said, Larry, I'd like to come over and pitch a column for your online service. I knew they didn't have the real estate in printed paper.
Uh-huh.
And that's completely driven by advertising, where online you can be kind of virtual as long as you like, So he said, sure, come on over. Before he would even look at the four pieces of paper that I had as slides to put on his desk, he said, okay, we're talking about UFOs, right? I've heard you're out pitching. I said, yeah. So he sat there and talked to me for 45 minutes, and it seemed like he read the same books I did because we had a really deep conversation about the topic. And at the end of it, he says, I'm sympathetic.
Okay.
Says, you know your stuff.
Yeah.
And at that point, he took a look at my five or six slides. He said, okay, I'll try you for a month. Let's see what happens. If nobody likes it, then you're off. And I said, fine.
Mm-hmm.
About a month later, he calls me up on the phone. He says, come on over. I want to talk to you. I think, well, that's it. It's over with. I get in there, and there's a meeting going on. I walk in the door, and he says, there's our rock star. And I'm looking at him. I says, I don't know what you mean. He says, you're getting more page views than all the columnists combined.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that was the old days. Here we are 5 years later, and my numbers are quadruple what they were. What I got in a month, I get in a day now.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so it, amazing numbers. And in fact, about a month, 2 months ago, they did a cover story on me.
Mm-hmm.
There I was on the front page of this weekly paper, and they had a three-page cover story inside.
I printed it. I love it. It's great. Yeah, I've got I printed the e-file. The truth is out there.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And you wouldn't believe I'm in the supermarket. Hey, I saw you on, you know. So I can't get away from it now. I was pretty anonymous up until then. But the bottom line with the whole thing is that I've opened people's eyes and started out with strictly New York State-type stories and New York State-type statistics, and that's kind of what led to me crunching numbers. I did New York State statistics, and what happened was, this is like in 2015, my spouse and I had all these New York State investigators saying, we didn't know about that pattern. We didn't know about that pattern either, you know. Oh, my God, where are these charts coming from? And we sat down over a burger and a beer in October of 2015 and said, look at all the cool stuff we discovered in New York State by just putting county data with the sighting information.
Yes.
That's not available in either of the databases. And I said, why don't we do the whole country? And we just stared across our drinks at each other and said, you know, we must be nuts. It's going to take us a year. And it ended up taking us 16 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we started doing. January 1st, I was up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I started. I downloaded the National UFO Reporting Center's database at that time. Amazing what the bandwidth is like on January 1st.
Yeah. When people
amazing
are
bandwidth.
Yeah.
Everybody's sleeping it off. You know?
That's right. So. That's right. Okay, question. So before we got on, we were talking county statistics, and do you have any for the local? And I've only got 2 minutes, but yes.
Yeah. Okay, real quick one. Your Missouri county there, which is
Johnson?
No, I'm sorry. That's Jackson. Jackson, Missouri, had a total in that 15-year period of 2,903 sightings.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
oh, I'm sorry. That's the whole state of Missouri.
Okay, that's
the
state. Okay,
the county of Jackson hit 584.
Okay,
and I've got a municipal breakdown. We can always do after the break. And then in Kansas was Johnson County. Okay, and Johnson County had 236.
Okay. Okay.
And I don't have the top number here for you because I got distracted with the cat story. So.
That's fine. We're good. Okay, and we only have 2 minutes left, so we're going to have to, for people to contact you. Are you you're doing another book though, right?
Well, we're working on the cities directory. And what the thing is, like when nobody had ever done county resolution before, we hope with the next book, probably sometime next year, you'll be able to go into this book, look up a state, look up your county, and there'll be a municipal breakdown for that county.
Okay, which would be fabulous. And then you're also possibly the TV show.
Yeah, we've been signed to that. I don't know if that's moving along or not. But one heads up. I think you're going to see something really cool in the New York Times in the next month or two.
Okay.
I can't tell you more than that, but that's the deal.
Really cool.
Be sure to have me back.
Believe me, yes, you're going to be back. We just barely scratched the surface with this. So thank you. And just in time for holiday gift giving, we're doing the show for that very purpose. UFO Sightings Desk reference, United States of America, 2001 to 2015, Cheryl Costa. And follow the blog, okay? Syracuse New Times. Go on there. If you don't, just Google Cheryl Costa. It'll pick it up. Or you can go on and search UFO. It'll find it. But that, you can get a whole lot of content just from following along and then, you know, if the TV, when that happens too. But Cheryl, thank you. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Okay, and we'll be in contact again. In the meantime, you know, don't be so quick to just discount your own sense of what's up. What's up? What is that? Question. Keeping an open mind gives you a little bit more perspective and a willingness to see things that other people are missing. The minute you say, uh-uh, no way, no how, the universe manages to surprise you. How's that? All right, so keep looking up. Enjoy your downtime. And maybe you'll find something unusual that you can share with the rest of us. Cheryl Costa, my guest. Check her out. Get the book. In the meantime, it's Wendy's Coffee House, the blog spot. I'll put the links up there, and you can find out, maybe do a little bit more connection, a little more researching for yourself. The mind is a powerful thing. You've got one. Don't waste it. See ya.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.